COVID-19 has had an outsized impact on women and girls in the United States and around the world. The pandemic is also disproportionately impacting minority communities across the United States with higher rates of infection and death. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday Podcasts, hosted by the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program and Maternal Health Initiative. In today's podcast, we share highlights from a recent event on COVID-19, women, and race, where I had the pleasure of discussing these issues with Congresswoman Alma Adams. Congresswoman Adams is the representative from the 12th Congressional District of North Carolina. She is a representative on the Committee of Financial Services, the Committee on Education and Labor, and the Committee on Agriculture. She is also the co-founder of the Black Maternal Health Caucus and founder and co-chair of the Congressional Bipartisan Historical Black Colleges and University Caucus. We start this podcast with Congresswoman Adams' opening remarks.
This conversation is about gender, racial disparities, and it could not be more timely as our nation grapples with unprecedented public health crisis and the recent incidences of racial violence and police brutality. We're still reeling from the heartbreaking murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Elijah McCain, and countless others due to systemic racism that's still pervasive in America. But as has been said, I'm optimistic and I'm feeling hopeful for the first time in a long time that we can continue to make the progress toward racial justice and address the darkest legacy of our country and the impacts that we will all experience to this day. Now, you already know this, but COVID-19, this era has been an especially trying time for our country. We're feeling the impact in each and every community. And in particular, though, the statistic tells us that women and people of color are bearing the brunt of it. COVID-19 has revealed what the Black community and communities of color have known for a long time. Health outcomes are further compounded by systemic and structural racism. COVID-19 has exposed that women have what women have known for a long time. Gender inequality exists. It threatens economic empowerment and it increases vulnerabilities. The pandemic has shown us in the starkest terms how wide the gaps are in health outcomes between Black and white America and between men and women. Racial gender disparities are further exacerbated by this current pandemic. Now, minorities have been experiencing higher rates of infection, death, particularly African Americans. In Louisiana, for example, Blacks account for 70% of the deaths, but only 33% of the population. In Alabama, they account for 44% of the deaths and 26% of the population. And in Chicago, 72% of deaths have been African Americans, while we make up less than a third of the city's population. So when we look at the numbers, we must remember that our immigrant community, because of the current administration's immigration stance, has made them fearful about coming forward, even due to illness. So we don't know the actual number for this demographic group.
So even before the COVID-19 pandemic, Black women in America are two and a half to four times more likely to die in childbirth than their white counterparts, regardless of their socioeconomic status or education level. Some reports show even higher discrepancies. Ending preventable maternal mortality is central to both of our work. And given the current state of COVID-19's disproportionate impact on Black and Brown communities, alongside protests around police brutality in the United States that has become a global movement, what opportunity do you see for Congress to address not only racial disparities in the United States, but also racial disparities in the US health system, including in Black maternal health?
Well, let me just spend a moment on an issue that I've been fighting for in Congress, one of the major public health crises of our time, that is Black maternal health. The significant health disparities that Black mothers and infants face are exacerbated by this COVID-19. So for me, the issue is deeply personal. My focus on Black maternal health began when my daughter survived a complicated pregnancy that almost claimed her life. So I knew that when I got to Congress, I had to make this a priority. I see a tremendous opportunity for Congress and our society as well to pursue transformational structural change, because the system isn't working for so many people, especially women and minorities, and it really is time to try to do something else. I've been fighting all of my life against racism and gender inequality because Black women experience a double impact of these harmful systemic issues. So when it comes to maternal health, moms in America are more likely to die in childbirth than mothers in any other developed country. The United States has the highest maternal mortality rate among affluent countries because of the disproportionate death rate of Black mothers. And the Black maternal health in the coronavirus era is truly a crisis within a crisis. So as you mentioned earlier, Black women, regardless of their educational level or their socioeconomic status, are nearly four times more likely to die from preventable pregnancy-related complications than women of other races. Black women in the U.S. suffer from life-threatening pregnancy complications twice as often as white women. We're also seeing that Black women experience higher rates of maternal complications and infant mortality. They are three times more likely than white women to have fibroids, and that can cause postpartum hemorrhaging, and they're more than twice as likely to lose an infant to premature death. These are stark disparities, and they haven't improved over the last six decades. But research does tell us that cumulative stress of racism and sexism undermines Black women's health, making them more vulnerable to complications that endanger their lives and the lives of their infants. But I believe that we're experiencing a national reckoning. And in this unique moment, I definitely see an opportunity for Congress, but also for our local governments, to enact policies that begin to address our country's greatest ills. Now, I had the privilege of serving in local and state government, so I know that things can happen there. And I'm proud to support bills like the Justice and Policing Act that we just passed out of the House, the Black Maternal Health Omnibus, the Health Equity and Accountability Act, and Medicare for All, just to name a few. But so my caucus has been working hard to present a vision of a more equitable world in which healthcare is considered a human right, because I believe it is a human right. And we strive to root out bias and inequality from our systems. I think that's what we really have to do.
So we're going to make a hard turn from health to look more at unemployment for women. As we know, the double, triple burden that women face. Women are faced with increased unemployment, even more unemployment than men in the United States right now. But we also have increased caregiving responsibilities. Can you speak to COVID-19's impact on women's economic empowerment and workforce protection in the United States?
It's deeply concerning because the pandemic has completely wiped out the historic job gains that women have made over the past decade. And, just a few months ago, women represented the majority of the U.S. workforce. We're overrepresented in the most impacted industries, leisure industries, hospitality, healthcare, education. And when you look at some of what we're calling the essential workers, they're women. Women as waitresses, daycare providers, hairstylists, hotel maids, dental hygienists, and so on and on. So although the June jobs report showed a positive reduction in women's unemployment, the recent wave of cases that seem to be spiking across the country will likely result in a second round of shutdowns. That's gonna further harm women. Despite 41% of mothers being the primary breadwinners for their family, they continue to face the wage inequality. Now that really doesn't make sense. They're doing the providing, yet they're not getting the income. If you think about it, more than four in five Black mothers, that's like 81%, are breadwinners. Majority of these mothers are raising families on their own. So two in three Native American mothers are breadwinners. So we deserve equal pay for equal work. Working hard is not enough if you don't make enough. So I'm a co-sponsor proudly of the Paycheck Fairness Act, a big proponent of raising the wage. I did that all in North Carolina as well. If we look at the wage and wage gap, we could benefit our working women if we would increase that wage. So workforce protections. We've led in a number of areas here. And we know that if swift action wasn't taken, then we'd be failing our frontline healthcare workers, because we make up, women do, 52% of essential workers. Non-white women are more likely to be doing essential jobs than anybody else. So the work that they do has often been underpaid, undervalued, and an unseen labor force that keeps the country running. So, you know, it's really important that we continue to identify ways to support women and ensure that they weather this crisis, because we are on the front lines and we must be supported.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think we can also learn from, you know, past pandemics that right. women took much longer to be able to recover financially, economically after the pandemic. And also, and this leads into my next question, we also learned from Ebola that there was an increase in gender-based violence during that time. And we are finding that from the offset of the COVID-19 pandemic, that there has been an increase in gender-based violence around the world. For every 3 months of lockdown, there will be an additional 15 million cases of gender-based violence. I mean, that's astounding to me. And predominantly, we're seeing news on the rise of intimate partner violence, or as some people would call domestic violence. But there's also been reporting of a rise in things like child marriage, sexual exploitation of women and girls, and other harmful practices. Can you speak to the issue of gender-based violence and the role of Congress in addressing this issue?
Around the world, one of every three women has experienced physical or sexual violence at some point in their life. Now, there are communities across the U.S. where laws are inadequate at protecting women from intimate partner violence and abuse. And I think that's why we need to really implore our state governments to really be looking at these things a little more carefully. But tragically, calls to domestic violence hotlines have been soaring over the past several months. And that suggests certainly an increase in abuse, violence, and harm. And stay-home orders compounded by increased unemployment, job loss, and, you know, we're talking about stress and decreased space at domestic violence shelters. All of these things make an already unsafe situation much, much worse. So around the world, we've seen a dramatic increase in the demand for social services and assistance. You have people going to food banks who've never been before. Meanwhile, you've got social, health, and legal service providers such as shelters and food banks, legal aid offices, childcare centers, healthcare facilities, rape crisis centers. They're overwhelmed, and they at the same time are understaffed. So as a survivor myself of domestic violence, I know firsthand how important it is that we keep working to pass and strengthen legislation to improve services for survivors, like the Violence Against Women Act. I agree with the policies that are emphasized by the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights and the United Nations that countries must incorporate a gender perspective in their response to COVID-19 crisis. So Congress is following this issue today, real close, and I believe that there's some steps that we must take, including encouraging states to support the development of alternative reporting mechanisms, expanding shelter options, supporting independent women's groups, supporting the capacity of the security and criminal justice sectors, maintaining vital sexual and reproductive health services where domestic and sexual violence victims are often identified and supported, financing economic security measures for women workers, especially those who are serving on the front lines of the pandemic or in the informal economy, and other groups disproportionately affected by the pandemic, such as migrant workers, refugee, homeless, and trans women, and collecting comprehensive data on the gendered impact of COVID-19. Data is increasingly important because, you know, sometimes as politicians, we tend to dismiss things, not move on to doing what we need to do, and because it's right to do, because we say, well, where's your proof? I mean, how do we know that? So, you know, I think that this is an issue that we really need to stay on top of.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcasts, and thank you to Congresswoman Adams for her commentary and insights. To learn more about the Momnibus Act and Black maternal health, or to listen to this event in its entirety, visit the .mom column at newsecuritybeat.org or follow us on Twitter at @Wilson_MHI. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to Friday Podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts.